I just want to talk to you in my last closing session here about turning your test or your trial or your hardship into a testimony, story, victory that God can use to encourage others. You know, I think that if Mary of Nazareth were alive today, can you imagine how many editors, TV and radio hosts would be clamoring at her door for her story? Because she had quite a story. No woman ever had a more fantastic story to tell, starting from being, you know, seeing the angel and then giving birth, though she'd never been to a man, and then it's the Son of God, and then watching him die and everything, and they would have a great story to use with her. But everyone in this room has a story, and some of you have come up to me and you say to me, I have a story too. It's different than your story, but I have a story. And yes, you do have a story, different than mine, but a story all the same. And people want to hear, believe it or not, they want to hear your story. Sometimes you might think, I have no idea who would want to hear what I have to say. But people love to hear other people's stories. They love to hear how they've worked through things. It helps them work through things in their own lives. And people are just fascinated with people's stories. You know, I realized that just in the last few weeks, and this is just a funny little thing, but it really showed me something about how we operate as people and how people are fascinated with people's stories. I put a little video blog. Have any of you ever heard of video blogging? So I'm like not techie at all, but I'm kind of like getting into the tech world, and I did this little test thing. My publisher, someone at my publishing house had been encouraging me for a few years, why don't you do video blogging? And I'm like, because I would have no idea at all how to do that. Well, on the 4th of July, I was having my quiet time with the Lord out in our backyard. This was just like a week after I found out that I had breast cancer, and the Lord had given me the word freedom for the year. I don't know if any of you are in the practice of asking the Lord for a word for your year, just one word, and then following that word all the way through. Well, this year, my word is free or freedom. And so it's 4th of July, it's Freedom Day, right? So I'm really thinking about free and freedom. And the Lord just really ministered to me as I was sitting there, and I just had this idea that I was just going to go in my house with my new little iPhone, and I was just going to flip it where I could see it, and I was just going to do a little message, and I was going to put this little message, if it turned out, on Facebook. Well, I've never done anything like this. I can't even stand looking at pictures about myself. I still need, like, healing in that area. So for me to put a video on would just be, like, intense and crazy. And remember, I was about perfection before, so for me just to flip a camera around when I'm not, like, you know, fancy or anything, I mean, it's like, really, like, but it just wouldn't leave. It was one of those things. I'm sitting in my backyard and I'm trying to ignore the thought, and I can imagine what I'm going to say. My next day was a surgery, July 5th. And so, anyway, finally I just said, I'm just going to do it. And I just went into my office room in my house, and my husband didn't even know I was doing this. He was out in the backyard somewhere, and I just, you know, he knew after it had been on Facebook for like about 10 hours. He goes, what did you put on Facebook, you know, that's getting all of these shares and everything? And anyway, the reason I'm telling you this is because little 3-minute video that I put on Facebook got women that I don't even know interested in the story. So interested in the story that they began just sharing it all over the place. Within a couple day time, I find out that this group, that it's kind of like a book club, but it's more like a international online Bible study club. They decided to use one of my books for their end of their summer. They do a month-long summer thing, the end of July till the end of August. Well, because I had cancer, and I'm just being honest here because I want you to see how people care about people's stories. Because I had cancer, they decided, they didn't even really know me, they just knew I was an author, let's find one of her books we can do for our July thing. because then we can all be praying for her and support her and encourage her by using one of her studies. So the next thing I know, I'm getting a message saying, we found you have a 30-day DARE. Can we use the faith DARE? Would you mind? And it's like, no, of course, that'd be great. I had no idea the magnitude of what I was saying yes to at the time. And then they messaged me another thing. Well, you know, the video blog was really inspiring. Can you just do one a week for 4 weeks? Like, would that be too much? You could even do them ahead of time, and we could, you know, we don't know your treatment schedule, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that would be fine too. And so before I knew it, before I realized what was happening, like hundreds and hundreds of women have signed up to do the Faith DARE this summer, which is a 30-day DARE. Now, I want to tell you something because it kind of goes with some stuff he was saying about books. The Faith DARE is a book that was published 3 years ago. It was a book that my publisher, that they approached me about doing this because I had done this Faith DARE type of idea on my blog and had a ton of traffic. So they were sure that this Faith DARE book was really going to do well. And it really has done not much of anything. I mean, it's still in print. It's not terrible. It's not good. It's just kind of like, eh, you know, like right there. Well, it's been in print for 3 years, but because women cared about my story now, women I didn't know, now the Faith DARE is on 3 bestsellers lists in the top 10 today. Like, and I'm telling you that because I can't even believe it. It's been out 3 years, for goodness sake. But the thing about it is it's because it cared about my story. But then what happened was, is because that happened, now this is the better news, this is the better exciting part for me, is that then my publisher, who really hasn't contacted me for over a year or something, there's really no need, you know, they contacted me because of the action on the Faith DARE to do a free promotion, ebook promotion, going all the way back to Deeper, which has been out for several years now, which is the book of my heart, and they know that. So they want to do, during September, while I'm having radiation treatment, they want to do a promotion, a re-promotion of Deeper. And I'm like, God, you are so, remember, he's working behind the scenes of our life. He is working behind the scenes. So people really care about stories. So your story is important. And the things that have happened in your life up to this point might seem inconsequential to you after you've gone through it, but it is part of your story, it's part of your history, and it's time to develop your potential. So let me tell you about potential. Nobody starts at the finish line. So even if no one else believes in you, God does. Take that confidence and begin, when you leave from this conference, begin working towards your goal. Potential means existing in possibility, not in act. So you have potential. It's just the possibility within you, but it just hasn't happened yet. But God has put that seed, that story of potential within you and in your life experience. But potential is kind of like a box of cake mix. Just because I have cake mix on my shelf doesn't mean I'm going to have a cake. There's a few things I have to do with that box of cake mix, like take it off the shelf, add some things to it to get it from potential, from the shelf, the potential to the shelf, to the pan, and to my table. And potential cannot manifest without a form. Like concrete is poured into a mold. So what is form? It's your decision to write your story. So you put some form around the decision to say, yes, God, I will write my story. And then to have it developed properly, you have to have a plan. You have to pray over that plan. You have to have a purpose within that plan and do something about it. Don't wait until everything is perfect. Do something now, because you have potential and you can waste away your days waiting for the perfect timing or for the perfect burst of inspiration or whatever. But if you really want to be a writer, you have to start writing. And there's no time better than now. Scripture says that it is God that works in us to will and to do then of his good purpose. And then it also says in Ephesians that we're his workmanship. We've been created to do the good works that he's prepared beforehand. So if that is true, that he's prepared things for each of us individually beforehand, he's put the potential in us, he's allowed his story, our history, throughout the days of our life and our experience, now we need, like I said last time, to listen. Because he works in us to will so that we will do. So how does he work in you to will? He begins working in your mind. So not all those ideas that go through your mind are just random stray thoughts. Pay attention. Some of them are. Some of them are just like a bad pizza or something. But like, pay attention to your thoughts and get in the habit of saying, God, is that you? Like that day when I was driving home and he said, stop looking and start writing, which began this whole journey for me. I kept saying, is that you? Is that you? And it would not go away. It kept persisting. So get in the habit of asking him, is that you beginning to work in me so that I will do and walk out your good purpose? So people want a book in hand, but we have to do the hard work. We can't start at A and click our heels and be at Z tomorrow. It doesn't happen that way. In 1 Peter, it says that each one of us should use whatever gift he has received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms. So you take the gift that you have of communication, and now it is our responsibility, if we've been given that gift, to use that gift to serve other people. Now, if you haven't heard anything from me this whole time when I've been up here, I'm trying to reiterate the point consistently that it is not about us. It's bigger than us, which is exciting. It's as big as the glory of God, which is like amazing, and it's to help other people. And right here in Scripture says we use whatever gift we've received to serve other people. And it all starts with a seed. It's like birthing. Like a seed is planted in a woman's womb, and it takes 9 months for that baby to be born. And during that time, it is growing, it is being nourished, and it is being watched over. But nevertheless, it just doesn't happen. It isn't just like, oh, I want a baby. Oh, I'm pregnant. Yay, I'm having the baby tomorrow. It doesn't happen that way. And I've heard so many authors, when they get their books or they get an article published or something like that, say, like, it's just like giving birth. It's like a new birthday. I've just given birth to something new, to a new work. And it really is very much like that. I want to remind you, though, of the parable of the talents, because I think that this is really important. You know, it is in Matthew, and Jesus is talking about that someone was given 5 talents. And that person took the 5 talents, worked that 5 talents, and gained 5 more. So they doubled what was given to them. Somebody was given 2 talents. They worked the 2. They gained 2 more. So again, they worked hard and it was doubled. One was given 1 talent. And it says that that person dug a hole and buried the talent, hiding the master's money. So there was no increase. There's nothing happened. It was a buried talent. For the first 2, it was said to them, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with the few things, and so now I'll give you more. When the last one who buried the talent was asked why they did that, he said, I was afraid, so I hid the talent. And what was said to him is, you wicked, lazy servant. Now, I wonder sometimes if God has given us an ability, a talent, a desire, a story, and we take it because we're afraid. And we hide that very thing. We bury it, we cover it up, we hide it, we walk away. We're afraid that we can't do anything with it. We're afraid that we ourselves are not qualified. We're afraid that nobody would ever want to hear our story or be interested. And so God has given us something and we bury it instead of asking him, what would you want me to do with this? How do you want me to work with this? What do you want me to do with this? And so it's very important that we stay focused and that we realize on a regular basis that my life and the happenings in my life are being arranged around a purpose much bigger than just me, and that we pay attention. Joyce Meyer said something about the talent. She said, many people are like the third servant. They hide their talent because they are afraid. They're afraid of responsibility, afraid of judgment, afraid of what people will think. They are afraid to step out. They're afraid they might fail, afraid of criticism, afraid of other people's opinions, afraid of being misunderstood. They're afraid of the sacrifice and the hard work involved to take the talent and work it. So let me ask you, where has your life taken you? You might want to leave this weekend and start by making a list of the significant things that you have experienced in life. I think it's helpful sometimes. I mean, it might really surprise you because you might just be able to think of things in your life, like the biggies, like really stand out. But it's a really sometimes painful but also very rewarding and fun personal exercise to make a timeline. I just did this with a group. I took a group of young women through Deeper just around my kitchen table. We had 12 women for 12 weeks doing Deeper, all in their 20s. And so they haven't lived that long, so their timeline's really short. But like this one night, I gave them the exercise while they were sitting there. So it was quiet, and they're all furiously writing. And then I start looking around, and some of them are weeping. And because when they put it on paper, some of them realize that, like, there were things that happened in my life that if I'm trying to think of my timeline, like what happened in the first 10 years, there's things that they never thought of. The exercise isn't so that they stay there and feel sorry for themselves. It's to start to see that God has always been with us. And these are the things that have been shaping us and leading us up to this point. And so you might start by making a list of significant things, because usually your passion, your interest, and even your ministry is going to come from the significant things that God has allowed in your life. Like I told you last night, I never wanted to be a poster child for Christian women who've gone through depression. I never wanted to be a poster child for divorced and remarried Christian woman. I mean, like, that is ridiculous. And now, as I told you this morning, and I certainly never wanted to join the pink club. Nobody ever does. But God is in control of my life, and He knows exactly why I've been in every place that I've been. So why write with personal experience? Basically because people love to read about people. They love to read about how people are doing things. They love to read about what people are feeling about things, how people are struggling and suffering with things. And they love the inspiration of people winning and growing. Why do you think shows like The Biggest Loser are so big? Why do you think the music shows with the winners at the end are so big? People love to see people struggle to an end and win. Why do you think blogs are so popular these days? The most popular blogs are the most vulnerable and honest blogs. The blogs where the person writing the blog is either doing things that are giving people tips and helps for things that will help them in their life. There's a lot of mommy blogs like that. Or then there's more kind of like journey blogs that are a little deeper thought, but it's the thought that the author of the blog is writing in 250 to 500 word increments, part of their own personal journey. And people get hooked because then they listen and they read and they think, oh, I'm not alone. And so write a story from your life experience that teaches others through an event. Discover the significance of what you've been through. So you take the raw facts of your life, you organize them, you decide on a theme, and that will offer something of value to others. So, what is a personal experience story? Usually it's dramatic happenings with a universal appeal. Sometimes it's common happenings that is told dramatically, but still has a universal appeal. So I want you to think of some of the things you've been through and think, is this something that I feel like God is wanting me to open up and share about? Even if it's, at first, it probably is just going to be in your own local community and church or on a personal blog. But then you identify an area that stands out in your life And now you start doing research, collecting every bit of information you can get about it. When I am starting to work on an area in my life that I'm sure that, okay, God, you've obviously allowed me to go through this, what I usually do is I get a file area. I have files now that I have for this, but I used to just get a file box for whatever I was working on. And I would have it clearly tabbed with, when I was researching a lot about the step family or blended family, anything I could read anywhere, from People Magazine to USA Today to, you know, a Christian book, anything, I was always putting quotes or clippings or articles into the files that I was saving on the different areas, children in the blended family, divorce and remarriage, hardship, custody battles, anything that had to do with that, because I knew if we lived through it, God was going to use us to speak up about it. So I was collecting things in that area for years before my husband and I ever wrote a blended family book. I didn't know we were going to write a book. I just knew that God would surely want to use us if we lived through it. And thank God we lived through it. But what I'm saying is that an organized structure where you start clipping things. Another area would be, this one is just like a little more general. You know, obviously, I have a real interest for women in their lack of security. Women are very insecure. I know this. I'm a woman. I've struggled with this myself. Why do you think I talk about pretty, perfect, and polished is not going to be the answer. But because I have such an interest in this, I'm also always clipping out anything that has anything to do with beauty or self-improvement or Botox or, you know, whatever. Not because I'm going to tell people they need to do those things. I want to keep discovering what's behind all of this. What is this crazy culture we live in that is teaching women from a young age that they will never be enough? And so I have certain headings, and as I come across anything of that nature, instead of just thinking this is really good and underlining it, I might underline it in a book, copy it on my printer, put that in my file, cut it out from a magazine, whatever it is. And then when I go back to that file, I have a collection of a lot of powerful facts that aren't my facts that can be added to my story to make my story more helpful for other people. And how to find and use ideas. Is your idea ready to go? Not all ideas are ready to go. Let me tell you, if you have a story that involves hurt, it's not wise to try to get that story out while you're still bitter. It's not wise to get that story out when you still have unforgiveness. You're not healed enough for God to use the story. There is a reason God took those 8 years for me before deeper could ever come out. Because honestly, when I was writing it in its first phases, there were parts about the divorce that wasn't very nice. By the time I got, and this was even before an editor got a hold of it, by the time I got to year 8 and it was ready to go, I simply said what my ex-husband told me I could say on a platform if he was in the front row. And all I said was, he came home one day after 13 years of marriage and said those 5 words no woman ever wants to hear, Debbie, I have never loved you. That's all I say. That's all I say to this day. That's what I say when I speak about it. And I never go into any detail except that it's very important for us to yield our heart towards forgiving people who have hurt us. But it would have been much different. Same with the blended family book. I mean, if we would have written that sooner, it would have been a train wreck. And so sometimes not all stories are ready to go. But when you, as a Christian writer, are telling your story, writing a blog, doing an article, you, even though it's your story, you have to make sure that it stays true to biblical teaching. You don't want to go like off the rail here and just be a complete and total heretic. I don't mean you have to play nice about everything. I mean, I've been doing a blog the last couple of weeks just with what I'm going through right now, where I say in my blog, I started one blog saying I cry every morning. Now, I haven't cried for a few days, but for the first few weeks, I cried every morning. I am a morning person, and when I wake up, generally, I'm like, it's a new day, like one of those kind. It's kind of funny because both of my sons are that way, and their wives are like, oh, my gosh, like I married your mother. You know, I mean, like they come over and they tell me that they just wake and go, good morning, and their wives are like, I need coffee, you know. So that's my normal mode of operation when I wake up. So how it's been is I wake up, and that's how I am. And then all of a sudden, it was like, oh, wait a minute, I have breast cancer. And then I would just start crying. So in my blog, I was like, I wake up crying every day. In my blog, I talk about punching the pillows. But then I end it by saying, isn't it wonderful that I can weep, that I can punch some pillows, and that I can get back around to knowing that at the end of the day, I can trust God with this new challenge that I'm in. So keeping it biblically correct doesn't mean you have to be nice or too careful. It's just that you have to keep centering things back around the bigness of God. And also, if you want to tell your story, just because you're a Christian writer doesn't mean that you aren't responsible for making it somewhat interesting. Your story needs to be interesting while you're still telling the truth. And it must be significant. Does it inspire and inform? So when I talked about like collecting all these materials, part of that makes the story interesting, because then, like in Deeper, I tell my story, but that book's not just my story. There's a few other women's stories in there woven throughout the whole, even though it's a nonfiction, through the whole plot, so to speak, of the book, are a few other women's stories in their details with their names changed by permission. Because my story alone, quite frankly, wouldn't be interesting enough. It must meet needs, answer questions, and deal with real problems. It needs to have, like I said, a universal appeal, and it's important for it to offer a fresh angle. That's really important. And so I don't know how to tell you what a fresh angle would be, but one way that you can tell what's been done before, and this is very simple, is if you have an idea. Like I have an idea right now, that I've had for about 6 months. And so what I do with that idea first, after I pray about it, then if I feel like maybe I want to proceed with that idea, then I go to Amazon. Amazon's wonderful. And I put that idea in Amazon, and it will come up if there's any books that are on that subject. And then I can start looking in the nonfiction category, since that's what I write, if there's any books on that subject, or if a title like what I'm thinking of, the subject what I'm thinking of, isn't even been touched very much at all. That's what we did with the Blended Family book. It's definitely a niche market. There were no Christian publishers that wanted to publish a Blended Family book. I mean, they're getting better about that now, but nobody wanted to touch that with a 10-foot pole. We wanted to do it 3 years prior to it ever getting accepted and being done. But when we would Google things about blended family, there were just only like two or three books. One of them's a big book, a very popular book. It's a great book, but it's not someone who's been in the trenches. So what's different about it is we've lived in the trenches. And so we kept thinking that this would fill a need. But about the niche market, like he was talking about, it's great if you can get a niche market, because you can get, you know, a tribe of people that want to follow and need to follow that blog or the message in that book. But the other thing about niche market that you need to be aware of is you might not, okay, the Beyond the Brady Bunch is on the bestsellers list. It's been on the bestsellers list in the category step parenting for a long time. Now, okay, don't be excited about that. The category step-parenting is such a little niche market that doesn't mean it's really selling a ton of books. It just means it's a very small niche, and within that very small niche, it is doing okay for that very small niche. So it just depends what you want to do. If you, I'm sure you've heard people say this about writing. If you want to write for money, then you might want to rethink what you want to write. If you want to write to inspire people, to help people, then by all means, find your niche and go for it with a fresh angle. I really like Ethel, her ideas of steps to focusing an idea, and so I want to share them with you. She says, decide on a general subject, then narrow it down to a specific subject within that general subject, and then ask 6 questions. What do I want to say? So that's going to be the theme. So for instance, a general subject for my husband and I was that we wanted to talk about marriage. Well, we narrowed it down to a specific subject that we wanted to talk about, blended family and blended marriage. So what did we want to say? Our theme became we wanted people to know that just because this has happened in your life does not mean that God can't redeem even that. That there is hope and help in Christ, even for people who have been remarried and in blended families. So our theme became hope. Why did we want to say it? What was significant about it? Because in America, there are three blended families formed every hour. That is crazy because of our divorce rate, even though it's kind of going down a little. But the blended family and remarriage structures is the largest family structure in America. So it was significant and it needed to be spoken to. To whom do we want to say it to? That's the audience. The audience we wanted to talk to were Christians, because within the Christian churches, because it is so nice, you don't want to talk about being remarried or being a blended family, because then you're kind of like second-class citizen Christians, because it's not addressed very much. We decided it's time to put a stop to that. It must be addressed, because Christians in a blended family need to know how to live in Christ's love in the middle of in-laws, outlaws, and ex-laws. Where do we want to say it? What would the market be? Christian market, we would do seminars and things like that. When do we want to say it? What would the timing be? And for us, the timing would be we wanted it sometime, if at all possible, within a five-year time area, just because remarriages were ramping up so quickly in America. How do we want to say it? Structure and fresh angle. So for structure and fresh angle, this is what we did. Not only did we make it very real and vulnerable, and we talked like back and forth, and I don't even know how God was able to make that work, but he really did. But the fresh angle was this. We had one chapter in the book called From the Other Side. And a publisher sent questions to all four of our adult children that were raised in a blended family. And the questions were very specific things like, you know, how did it feel to be a child, you know, with parents that are divorced? How did it feel to be a child with a new step-parent? What do you wish your mother did differently? What do you wish your father, what did you wish your step-parent did differently? And just things that really caused them to get real, because we told our kids, do not try to protect us. We want you to be real. We want you to be raw. We want you to be vulnerable, because if we don't do that, we can't help anybody. And boy, our kids took us up on that, I'll tell you that. But that is the most fantastic part of the whole book. If people only buy that book for that one chapter, they can gain so much information, because part of our thing, speaking of market, speaking of emphasis on this, with this idea is that if there are this many remarriages and divorces within Christian homes in America, we started getting a real heart for the children of divorce, because they're growing up, they're the next generation, and they're growing up with all of these hurts and all of these wounds, and a man and wife come together, you know, like Mr. and Mrs. Brady, and they're going to have their second happily ever after, and the kids are just supposed to trail along, but the kids didn't fall in love, the parents did, and the kids are hurting, grieving. These whole families are built on a foundation of loss. So that's kind of an example of how we took some of the things that Ethel Hurst said. What do you want to say? What's the theme? Why do you want to say it? What will be significant about it? Whom do you want to say it to? What will the audience be? Where do you want to say it? What market are you shooting for? When do I want to say it? Timing. And how do I want to say it? What will the structure and fresh angle be? And even though we were speaking to the church, this book has ended up being just in the general market of family and parenting books, which we're really grateful for. So in taking our test and turning it into a story or a testimony that will help other people, there's just a few things that we need to understand about test. First of all, you know, it says very clearly in James that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And that produces maturity. And that's why it says, consider it joy. Right. Consider it joy when you go through various trials. Because the testing of your faith is producing something greater within you. So, first of all, we have to understand that when we go through hard things, that God is working. And when we go through hard things, we are not alone. And when we go through hard things, God has a plan. I like to think of the life of Joseph when I think of timing. And I actually got these steps from Pastor Bob Cole. It was a Calvary Chapel pastor. But he talked about Joseph's life being Joseph was called to be the ruler of Egypt. And so here's what his journey into ruler of Egypt school looked like. So remember, there's a bigger picture. God knew he would be the ruler of Egypt. But it starts like this. Step one. Use your gifts, get mocked and ridiculed by your family. Step two, obey your father and get beat up by your brothers. Step three, get sold into slavery, spend 13 years as a slave. Step four, resist temptation and go to jail. Step five, use your gifts, spend an extra 2 years in jail. And step six, now you are the ruler of Egypt. I mean, it doesn't really make a lot of sense, you know? Like, is that how we would make somebody the ruler of something? So the same is true for us as writers. I mean, we'd like to think like, oh, God's given me a gift. I love to write. I want to get a message out. Let's go. Yay. And he's just like, oh, there's some steps. I've been preparing you. And sometimes you go through some hard things in the meantime till you get to that place where all of a sudden you're like, oh, God, I get it now. I get it. I was just telling a woman here who told me that she also was a divorced pastor's wife. And I said to her, you know, when I went through that, I thought I was the only person ever that would go through that, because who does this in the ministry? I was young and naive, and I really felt so alone. Sadly, I have since learned everywhere I go to speak, there's at least one or two women that come up to me and say, I resonate with your story because that was me. And I have to be like, I am so sorry. The same thing with depression. The same thing with, I started speaking up about mommy issues because my mother and I had our relationship healed. But we had some angst my whole life that deeply affected and wounded me. And when I was healed enough and she was gone long enough for me to be able to respectfully speak about it, guess what started happening? Floodgates. I mean, it would be like, that isn't even what the retreat was about. It would be like a 10-minute interlude in a story I was telling, and all women wanted to talk about the rest of the retreat was, that was me and my mom, and I need healing, or I'm that mother, and I need to change so I don't hurt my children. And so you just never know the hardships that God allows you to go through. Now, God has his own timing. He is not on our schedule. So if you are wishing it's tomorrow, well, I'm sorry. Just thank God he has his own timing and keep working towards the goal. God always has a plan, even when we can't understand it, and even when we don't necessarily agree with it. God is always working, and his plan will be accomplished. God is not hindered, this is important, by other people's bad choices that have affected our life. He will use everything to get us where we need to be. Do you know when my ex-husband left of me? Now, I just have to tell you, like, I had no idea at all. I really thought we had a really good marriage. We never fought. We served side by side in ministry. I mean, everybody thought we had a really good marriage. And so I was just as shocked as everybody. And I really felt that when he did this, that he forever stripped me also from any ministry the rest of my life. Like, how could God use a divorced pastor's wife? At that time, I had a weekly Bible study that we named, because I just like to name things. And so I named it Design for Living, because, again, I really wanted to know what God's plan was for our life. He had to have a design. That means plan, intent, and purpose. We were going to figure it out, and we were going to learn how to live in it. And so that's what this whole Bible study, it ended up being a community Bible study, women coming from many different churches. There's hundreds of women back then in the 80s when there weren't Bible studies like that. I didn't realize the significance of it at the time. until the day that I stepped down from that Bible study. I heard from my husband that he was leaving, and so the next Tuesday morning I was telling them that I would not be running their Bible study any longer. Before I moved to Northern California, the only place that I had family, these women gave me a going away thing at like this big restaurant and a banquet room, and they said a lot of nice things. They gave money for me and my kids. They were very sweet, and at the very end, while I was on stage and they wanted to pray over me, that one of them handed me this manila envelope. And she said, "This is everything Designed for Living, the logos, anything you've ever written." So, see, I had even forgotten. Like, I did do some curriculums back then, too. But anyway, anything that you'd ever written, all of your vision and everything is in this manila envelope, and we want to give it to you. And I said, "Oh, no, this is the women's ministry of this church. You need to keep it, and you guys just need to now just keep it going." And they said, "No, this was your vision, and God will use this again someday." Well, I knew enough to know that I needed to be respectful and not make a scene while I was on stage, so I just took the little manila envelope and I said, "Thank you." I went home that night as a newly single parent on my journey to be a single parent, relieved the babysitter, took my manila envelope, flipped through some of the things inside, put it back in the manila envelope, and stood over the trash can and threw it in the trash can in tears. I knew for sure, because what had happened to me, that my life in ministry was over. I have since learned, as I see evidenced in the Apostle Paul's teaching in the book of Philippians, that when he was in jail, he was telling them not to worry because he said, "What has happened to me will happen for my deliverance." And so things happen to us so something greater can happen in us and through us. Imagine my surprise when many years later, long after, you know, those Bible studies, the first thing ever published was released in 2000 and 2001, and then now comes 2008, and I get that call that every author does not want to get. I get a message to call back, you know, the head guy at David C. Cook, and so I'm thinking, okay, they're putting him in the graveyard. They've had a good run. That's good. And I call, and instead he says, "You know, no, we're getting rid of a lot of titles, but we're going to keep your books, and we're just going to repackage them, rename them. You get to like update them a little bit if you want to," which I did. And then they asked me to come speak at their national sales conference in Colorado Springs. I thought, well, that's interesting. I mean, because, you know, they have people, you know, like Francis Chan. You know, they don't need to, like, have Debbie Alsdorf speaking to their sales team. And so anyway, so I did, and I felt very honored to do that. And they wanted me to tell that specific story that I just told you about throwing it all away because I thought God was done with me. What I didn't realize is that behind me there were these square block things, and I thought it was their decoration in their small chapel. And each of them, they looked like little structures, and each of them had fabric, a different color fabric over it. And so I thought it was the decoration and it was their structure. But when I got done telling my story, they took the fabric off of those structures behind me, and they were the book covers of the new repurposed books. And it was a surprise that they had made these books the Design for Living Bible Study Series. The thing that I threw in the trash all those years earlier, God resurrected. Because you see, God is not hindered by other people's bad choices that have affected our life. Circumstances don't have to make sense to us. Everything makes sense to God. And drum roll, God is not in a hurry. We are. So we need to sit back and trust Him in the meantime. So test. There's the frustration test. When we're frustrated, the frustration test is, what are we going to do with that frustration? Are we going to spiral down, or are we going to keep looking up? Now, I don't know about you, but I'm an expert with acting out and spiraling down. I know how to do it really well, and I'm very good at throwing a pity party. I'm very skilled at it. So I had to learn some new techniques in order to walk with Jesus the way that I needed to walk with Him. This didn't mean that I needed to paste on a happy face, because I was also good at that fake facade as well. But what I needed to do is I needed to learn to live up. So there's two ways to live, and this is so important for us as people who want to help other people. You can live buried underneath your problems, or you can live standing underneath the promises of his love and care for us. One is crushing. The weight of our problems are burying us. We're living under. The other is living up. We're living in victory. We don't see the answer yet, but we believe that there are promises that we can stand in. Then there's the self-will test. Am I following him, or am I just following my own ideas and asking for his blessing? So sometimes when we're frustrated and we're in the middle, sometimes it's just because we're just wanting our own will and we're not letting go of that. And then, of course, there's the wilderness test. You know what it says in Deuteronomy about the wilderness test? That he humbled them to test to see what was in their hearts. Sometimes he will allow you to go through a season that is a true wilderness, and it's okay. Embrace it, welcome it, and understand that God is just preparing your heart. He's testing to see what's really in your heart. And then the loneliness test. You know, sometimes when you're on a writing project or you have a goal like this, some of you have friends and family that just think, who do you think you are? Why do you think you're going to write? Why are you going to spending your Saturday at a writer's conference? Really? I mean, get real. I mean, people don't get it. I mean, I'm going to tell you something so funny. I used to hear authors say this kind of thing, and I thought terribly of their families when I would hear this, but I get it now. Like, I would hear them speak, and they would go, yeah, you know, like, your own family doesn't even understand what you're doing. They don't get, like, all completely, like, over the top about your books. It's just, you know, like, it's your books. Big deal. Well, my husband is extremely supportive. I think my kids are proud now that they're getting a little bit older, but all my extended family, we never bring up, I mean, it's never brought up what I do, and they're all Christians. We never talk about it. It's never brought up. It's like the elephant in the room. Why? Because nobody gets why we would do this. Nobody gets, because sometimes people think we do this because we want self-promotion. But the truth is, anybody that's a real writer, that's working at writing something and going through the frustration test, the self-will test, the wilderness test, the loneliness test, you know that there is no amount of affirmation that could make you want to walk through what you got to walk through to have a story to give a message, right? So it is a special calling, so we can embrace it, but that's why we need to encourage one another. That's why groups like Inspire Christian Writers is good, because you need to encourage one another. Many of you have said very nice words to me today, and I want to tell you something. I don't take that for granted, because when we encourage, what we're doing is imparting the gift of courage. When you've said encouraging words to me, it's like you are giving me God's courage to keep doing what I'm called to do. When you say encouraging things to one another, you are giving that person courage to keep pressing on and to do what God's told her to do. And then finally, there's the faithfulness test. Will I use the talent God has given me? Will you bury it because you're afraid and insecure? Or will you work at it and use it and double it and grow it so that you can hear in your heart those words, well done, good and faithful service? So finally, here's just some ideas. Turning your test into a testimony. You can start a blog. Really, it's really easy to start a blog. It's the easiest thing in the world. You can have it set up in 20 minutes, and I'm going to tell you, having a blog is really fun. Even if nobody reads it, having a blog is really fun. And in time, somebody will read it. But it's good practice, and it really is a lot of fun. Use social media like Twitter, and you don't have to be on Twitter all day long. You can get a buffer program where you're just collecting again maybe quotes from Scripture or other people's quotes or quotes from your favorite book. You like the way the words are phrased, and they're just going out on a regular basis, like maybe every few hours or something. And then they do have stats on the more you blog, the more regularly, and the more frequently you're on Twitter, the more it grows. So, and I've tested that out a little bit. I did a thing where I blogged just once a week on my website, and I had good traffic that day. But if I blogged at least 3 days a week and sometimes 4 days a week, the traffic like tripled. So it's true. People, when they come to expect that they can get a little something from you on a regular basis, then they start looking for that. Write for your local church. Your local church has need of people writing for them. In bulletins, in curriculum, in small group stuff, whatever it is, find out maybe even editing something in your local church, because they probably need it, and that gives you a lot more experience. And then finally, God's put it on your heart, begin writing your book. You don't have to have a contract. You don't have to have a publisher. You don't have to have anything. Just start writing for the sake of writing. Get your idea, do your research, make your outline, and start working on your rough draft. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen tomorrow, but it's never going to happen at all if you don't start. You're not going to have a cake if you don't take the box off the shelf, put the eggs and the oil in it, and pop it in the oven. You're not going to have a book if you just think about your story and never sit down and organize it and begin writing. It's just not going to happen. I know that sounds simplistic, but it really is just the truth. And so that's about all that the Lord has given me to say to this group this weekend. And I want to thank you for having me to be with you all. I love to encourage other people to use what God has put within them. Because when we do that, not only is it enriching for our life, but it really helps people more than you have any idea. It really does. And I would just like to end by saying to you my mother's last words to me. I end every one of my speaking engagements, no matter what it is, with my mother's last words to me. My mother died of aplastic anemia, which is like an elderly leukemia. I was her caretaker in the end, and she lived with us until they needed to put her on hospice, and then she went across town and lived with my sister because we had teenage kids in the house. The hospice nurse told me on Monday to go in and to tell my mother it would be okay to let go, that we were at peace with it. And I said, I keep doing that. She goes, well, go try it again. And so I did. And so I went in and I told my mom we were at peace with this and it was okay. She's a Christian. It's okay for her to go. And she said, well, that's easy for you to say because you're there and I'm here and I'm not going anywhere without you and those boys. Now, she got really fiercely attached to me and my boys when we went through the divorce and she helped us so much. And I said, Mom, it's your time. It's not our time. And her bottom lip began quivering. My mother was not an emotional woman and she didn't really like to talk about feelings, but if she got the bottom lip quivering thing, I knew what was up. And I said, Mom, are you afraid? Now, I'm embarrassed to admit, because this was years ago now, but I'm embarrassed to admit that I was so naive that I didn't realize my mother, a Christian, would be afraid when she was at the point of death. And she said, yes, I'm afraid. You better hope that everything we believed in is real. And it broke my heart. And that was Monday, and I began praying, and I began praying earnestly. I mean, sometimes every hour of the hour, every time just the thought of the look on the fear on her face came to my mind, and I would say, Jesus, please don't let my mother die in fear. She knows you. She's walked with you. Please do something to assure her and let her die in peace. That was Monday. She slept most of the week. On Friday, the nurse called me at my home and told me to rush over to my sister's because my mother was in her rally, and she was specifically asking for me. I raced across town. Nothing could have prepared me for what I experienced when I walked up into the room where her hospital bed was. First of all, she was sitting up in her bed looking really strong, which she wasn't able to do for a long time. And the minute she saw me come through the doorway, she got this giant smile on her face. She was so thin then that it was almost like, you know, canvas stretched with teeth coming out. And she said, Debbie, it's so fancy there. And I said, where? My mother never used a word like fancy. My mother, unlike me, was not a storyteller, was not demonstrative. She was kind of a no-nonsense type of woman, never used a word like fancy. And I said, where, Mom? And she said, sit down and I'll tell you all about it. And I sat next to her bed. And as my mom began telling me everything she'd been seeing, and the hospice nurse in the corner was lipping to me, no meds. This is not hallucinations. And the hospice nurse had tears coming down her face, and she's writing everything out that my mom is saying. And then at the end she says, well, it's just about time for me to go get the boys so I could say goodbye. This is the same woman that said I'm not going anywhere without you and the boys. And I'm like, okay. And I raced across town and I got my teenage sons. We came back and she said, I'd like you to all sing for me one last time. She was all calm and happy, you know, and so she was a little controlling, so she told us exactly what to sing. And so we did. And as we're singing, the boys are totally oblivious, but she's looking around the room. She's smiling. She's nodding. She's like, I mean, it's like I'm sitting there going, I think I'm really like on holy ground. I mean, I'm pretty sure I can't see him, but I have a feeling I'm in the presence of angels right now just by watching her. When we were done singing, she looked at my oldest son who was 17 and she said, "Oh, Justin, you sound so much more beautiful with the angels." And he said, "Grandma, it's just me." And she said, "Oh, no, that's right. You can't see them. Oh, well, come on, let Grandma say goodbye." And so she motions him over to her bed. She takes his head into her hands and she says, "Justin, you've always been Grandma's big blonde boy and I have never wanted to leave you." And he is sobbing. This is the boy that as soon as he got his license a year and a half before that, he was like driving her car, taking her everywhere. He took her to JCPenney's every Saturday to get her hair done. And then they would go to lunch together at Carl's Jr. They have this cute little relationship and he's sobbing. And she goes, "But Justin, just promise Grandma one last thing before I go." She goes, "Because you know, I don't have to worry." She goes, "You know in the Bible where it says that he gives his angels charge over us to keep us in all our ways?" She goes, "I've seen them." She goes, "You're in good hands. So just promise Grandma one last thing before I go." And he's sobbing. He's like, "Anything, Grandma, anything." And she gets very firm. She says, "Justin, live like it's real because it is." And so he goes in the corner and he's weeping. And now she motions the 13-year-old to come over. And she does the same thing with him. And he's crying, "Anything, Grandma." And she says, "Cameron, live like it's real because it is." And now the boys are huddled together in the corner. They were so close to their grandma and they are sobbing. And she motions for me to come over the bed. And remember, we healed our relationship. So I thought it was going to be like, "My darling daughter, like how wonderful that you've forgiven me," or something. You know, it's always about me. But she was running out of energy. She just motioned me over. She took the collar of my shirt. She pulled my face right in front of hers. She looked straight in my eyes and she said, "Deborah, I'm only called Deborah if I was in trouble or something was dead serious. I always hated that name Deborah because of that. But now I kind of love it, though I don't want anyone to call me that because it was it's just like a special memory. Because the last thing my mother called me was Deborah." And she said, "Deborah, live like it's real. Because it is." And those were the last words I ever heard my mother speak to me. And after I said, "Okay, Mom," she said, "Oh, yeah, those women that you speak to," sorry, men, but I usually address women, "those women that you speak to, promise me that you will spend the rest of your life telling them to live like it's real, because it is." So we want to write to inspire. There's a story bigger than us. There is eternity at hand. None of us know how many days we have. May we all live like Jesus Christ is real because he is. May we live like he is wooing us to come to him every single day is real because he is. May we live as if he is truly the God that says he conforms everything according to the purpose of his will is fact and real because it is. And may you live as if it's true where it says that he is working in you to will and to do of his good purpose is real because it is. And in Psalm 138:8, where it says that he will complete and perfect the work in you, and that he will never abandon the work of his hands, which is you. May you live like that is real, because it is. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Debbie.